We finished last week. We looked at the Ten Commandments. And so that was in chapter 20 of Exodus. We're not going to go through all the chapters here. We're going to just, I'll give you a summary of some of it. But remember, Moses went up to the mountain up to this point four times. He went up in Exodus 19, 3 through 6, then 19, 8 through 13, then a third time in 19, 20 through 24, and then again in Exodus 20, 21, after he gave the Ten Commandments. And so he comes down in chapter 21 and he speaks. But chapters 21, 22, and 23, and 24, and so on, kind of set up the covenant that God gave. And obviously in chapter 20, he gives the Ten Commandments. In chapter 21, 1 through 24, 11, he gives the judgments for social life, for their civil life, you know, their relationship between each other. And then in Exodus 24, 12 through 31, 18, he gives statutes for their religious life and worship. So he's doing all this stuff, and Moses is given the statutes and judgments because God has given it to him. So we're going to read in chapter 20, verse 21. It says, "And the people stood afar off, and Moses drew near unto the thick darkness where God was. And the Lord said unto Moses, Thus shall ye say unto the children of Israel, Ye have seen that I have talked with you and from heaven." So God talked to them audibly from heaven. "Ye shall not make with me gods of silver, neither shall ye make unto you gods of gold." Remember, in the second commandment, they were not to make idols, right? Worship them or anything else. So here, he reiterates that they're not to make idols of gold and silver. "And then an altar of earth shalt thou make unto me, and shalt sacrifice thereon with thy burnt offerings and thy peace offerings." You might want to close that door. "Thy sheep and thine oxen, in all places where I record my name, I will come unto thee and I will bless thee. And if thou wilt make me an altar of stone, thou shalt not build it of hewn stone, for if thou lift up thy tool upon it, thou hast polluted it. Neither shalt thou go up by steps unto my altar, that thy nakedness be not discovered thereon." So, that's where he goes, and so he's given Moses from here on through 23 into 24. He's given them the commandments, which is, you know, the law is made up of statutes, judgments, and commandments. Okay, so now we're going to go to chapter 24 and verse 1, and again, God calls up Moses, and he said unto Moses, "Come up unto the Lord, thou and Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, and the 70 elders of Israel, and worship ye afar off." So they didn't go up on the mountain per se, but you know, they went, you know, they had set a perimeter, and they went up to the base of the mountain, these guys, and Moses. And then it says, "And Moses alone shall come near the Lord, but they shall not come up nigh or near, neither shall the people go up with him." So Moses goes up by himself. This is the fifth time he goes up. But before he goes up, "And Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments. And all the people answered with one voice and said, All the words which the Lord has said, we will do. And Moses wrote all the words of the Lord and rose up early in the morning and buildest an altar under the hill in the 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel." So through these chapters of 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, up to 24, God gave Moses the law, or part of the law, at any rate, which included the Ten Commandments, and Moses told the people. So the original giving of the Ten Commandments was not on the tablets, right? It was, he gave it to them. And then God tells Moses to write down all the words. So he wrote them down. So Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments, and all the people answered with one voice and said, all the words which the Lord hath said, we will do. Wow. So they responded and they said, oh yeah, we're going to do this. Yes. And they were all like-minded. Verse 4, so Moses wrote all the words of the Lord and rose up early in the morning and built an altar. And then it says in verse 5, and he sent young men of the children of Israel, which offered up burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings of oxen unto the Lord. Now, this is a really puzzling, I don't know if it's a puzzling verse, but it's an interesting verse because it says here he sent young men. And Bullinger says, at this point, the Levites have not been chosen as the tribe that was going to do service to God. So at this point, God is still, his desire is that all Israel will be a nation of priests. So he sent these young men and they offered peace offerings of oxen unto the Lord. And Moses took half the blood and put it in the basins, and half the blood he sprinkled on the altar. And he took the book of the covenant, which is what he wrote, and he read in the audience of the people, and they said, all that the Lord hath said we will do, and be obedient. So not only do they say they'll do it, but they'll be obedient. And Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people, and behold, the blood of the covenant which the Lord hath made with you concerning all these words. So what we would call this is a blood covenant, right? Now, this is the first time, well, it's not the first time Moses wrote, because in Exodus 17, 14, when they had had the battle with Amalek and God said he was going to wipe out Amalek from the memory of mankind, God told Moses to write that down and record that. But this is the second time that he writes. If you want to look up all the different occurrences of where God says to write, it's in the Appendix 47 of the Bullinger's Bible, the Companion Bible. And he gives a list of places that it speaks of the writings. So anyway, just thought that was interesting. So this is a blood covenant, and it says, concerning this, we will do all these words. We will be obedient to all this. And Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, behold, the blood of the covenant which the Lord hath made with you concerning all these words. And then went up Moses and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and the 70 elders of Israel. And they saw the God of Israel, and there was under his feet, as it were, a paved work of sapphire stone, and as it were, a body of heaven in his clearness. And I thought, that doesn't really communicate. But so Moses and Aaron and all the other guys, the elders, for the fifth time, they go up on the mountain. But those guys don't go up all the way, but they go up some of the way. And then in verse 10, the NIV says, and they saw God in Israel. Under his feet was something like a pavement made of sapphire, clear as the sky itself. And I looked up a couple of different translations, and they are all pretty similar. So that's how it reads. That's a little more understandable. Verse 11, And upon the nobles of the children of Israel, he laid not his hand. Also, they saw God and did eat and drink. So they're up there and they're eating and drinking. I don't know where they got it, but they got it. But did they actually see God? No, because it says several places that no man has seen God at any time. Moses didn't actually see God. Isaiah didn't see God. Elijah didn't see God. And God even said to them, if you look on my face, you'll die. So what they saw was God gave them a vision. He gave them an image, something to see that represented him. Verse 12, and the Lord said unto Moses, come up to me into the mount and be there, and I will give thee tables of stone and a law and commandments which I have written, that thou mayest teach them. So here's, you know, God's charge to Moses. He didn't raise up his hand to the elders, but he tells Moses to come up, and he separates himself, and he says, I'm going to give you these tables that I've written so that you can teach the people. So, verse 13, Moses rose up and his minister Joshua, and Moses went up into the Mount of God. So here, again, this is the first time we hear about Joshua being with him, but we can be assured that the reason that Joshua was there is because God told Moses to bring him, right? He wouldn't just bring him on his own. He was very specific about who could go up there. So God calls Moses to go up further and separate himself from the others, the Aaron and those other guys and the elders, but he takes Joshua with him. Verse 14, and he said unto the elders, tarry ye here for us until we come again unto you. And behold, Aaron and Hur are with you. If any man have any matters to do, let him come into them. And Moses went up into the mount, and a cloud covered the mount. And the glory of the Lord abode upon Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it 6 days, and the seventh day he called unto Moses out of the midst of the cloud. Now, you know, here's a great characteristic of a man of God. He calls him up, and the cloud is covered, and he has to sit there and wait 6 days. He has to have patience on God. He can't just pry it out of God. Okay, I'm here, God. What are you going to tell me? He has to wait. Remember there was, forget where it was, maybe Ezekiel, where he goes and buries his girdle and he comes back 7 days later and the guys, they want to know and they have to wait. And then God tells him to go back and he takes his girdle out of the dirt and then God gives him the revelation. So here Moses has to wait 6 days until God calls unto him out of the midst of the cloud. And the sight of the glory of the Lord was like a devouring fire on the top of the mount in the eyes of the children of Israel. And Moses went into the midst of the cloud and got him up unto the mount. And Moses was in the mount 40 days and 40 nights. Wow, long period of time. And that's where God's teaching him. And so, you know, there's another place in the Word where it talks about, and we'll see it later, where it says that Moses was the meekest man on the face of the earth. That's why God was able to teach him and how he had that patience and the willingness to wait. So Moses went up into the cloud and Joshua, I guess, just had to wait outside the cloud for Joshua to get done. Now, Exodus 25 speaks of the tabernacle and the materials needed to build it. God gives them all this information. And also the plans of the ark, you know, for the ark also. So they have this whole, you know, blueprint of what's to be built and how it's to be built and what it's to look like. And in it says in verse 1, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the children of Israel, that they bring me an offering of every man that giveth it willingly with his heart, ye shall take my offering. So God says, go and tell the children of Israel to bring offerings, to bring the things that are needed for the building of the tabernacle and the ark, and they're to bring it willingly. And so the people are to do it, and they're contributing it freely from the heart. Now, Exodus 26 and 27 continue with directions for the tabernacle, the ark, the courtyard, the Holy of Holies, the mercy seat. We go to chapter 28. And verse 1, it says, and take thou unto thee Aaron thy brother and his sons with him from among the children of Israel, that they may minister, God bless you, minister unto me in the priest's office, even Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar, Aaron's sons. And thou shalt make holy garments for Aaron, thy brother, for the glory and for the beauty. God bless you. And thou shalt speak unto all that are wise-hearted, whom I have filled with the spirit of wisdom, and they may make Aaron's garments to consecrate him, that he may minister unto me in the priest's office. So this is the establishment of Aaron and the line of Aaron as the high priests. And God gives this revelation to Moses. Then chapter 29 describes how Aaron and his sons are to proceed as God's priests and ministers. Chapters 30 and 31 continue instructions on worship and atonement and those kind of things, different sacrifices, so on. That gets us to chapter 31. That went quick, didn't it? That's the Cliff Notes, for those of you that cheated in college like me. Did you use those, Jim? Couldn't do that for engineering.
Yeah, there was no such thing.
There's no such thing.
Had all the solution manuals.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to turn to chapter 31, and we're going to jump to verse 12. let's see. Well, we're not going to do it. We'll read starting verse 1. And when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mount, the people gathered themselves together unto Aaron and said unto him, up, make us gods which shall go before us. Oh, that's 32. Sorry. 31, verse 12. Sorry. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak thou also unto the children of Israel, saying, verily, my Sabbaths ye shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that ye may know that I am the Lord that doth sanctify you. So that's a pretty important thing. He's talking to him about the Sabbath, which was the seventh day. And ye shall keep the Sabbath thereof, for it is holy unto you. Every one that defileth it shall surely be put to death. For whosoever doth any work therein, that soul shall be cut off from among his people. So remember, it was pretty cut and dry. If you defiled the Sabbath day, if you worked on the Sabbath day, you were to be put to death. And this is what the Pharisees thought Jesus Christ was doing when he healed people on the Sabbath day, you know, because they didn't understand what it meant. If you go to, hold your place there and go to Isaiah 58, it tells us about the Sabbath. Verse 13, Isaiah 58. If thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath day a delight, you know, you delight in it, you're excited about the Sabbath day, the holy of the Lord, honorable, and shall honor him, not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasure, nor speaking thine own works. Then shalt thou delight thyself in the Lord, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth, and feed thee with the heritage of Jacob thy father, for the mouth of the Lord hath spoken it. Well, Jesus Christ did what? He always did the will of the Father. He didn't do his own pleasure. He wasn't doing what he wanted to do on the Sabbath. He was doing what God told him to do. So he wasn't breaking the Sabbath. He wasn't working. He was doing the pleasure. He was delighting in the Sabbath. He was honoring his Father. So back to Exodus 31, verse 15. 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is a Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whosoever doeth any work in the Sabbath, he shall surely be put to death. Wherefore, the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations for perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever, for in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh he rested and was refreshed. And he gave unto Moses, when he had made an end of communing with him upon the mount, 2 tables of testimony, tables of stone, written with the finger of God.
Wow.
How cool must have that been? 2 tables of testimonies, tables of stone, written with the finger of God. So now we get to chapter 32. And this is important. And when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mountain, the people gathered themselves together unto Aaron and said unto him, Up, make us gods which shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we wot not, or we know not, what has become of him. Now here it says, you know, he's been gone a long time. It doesn't say how long Moses is gone, but we read in chapter 24, verse 18, that he was up there 40 days and 40 nights. That's a long time. And they say, Moses, they say, the man Moses. They just considered him just another man. And they said, he brought us out. They didn't consider that, you know, continually, many times, it was emphasized that God brought them out. He brought them out. It wasn't them, it wasn't Moses that brought him out, it wasn't Aaron, it was God that brought him out. They just did what God told them. And Aaron said unto them, now this is kind of interesting, I thought about this a lot. Aaron said unto them, break off golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, of your sons, and of your daughters, and bring them unto me. And all the people break off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them unto Aaron. And he received them at their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool. And after he had made a molten calf, and they said, these be the gods of Israel, which brought thee out of, or brought us out of the land of Egypt. Wow. A molten calf. One of the things is too, there's two big gods in the Egyptian religion. One's a bull and one's a heifer. You know, so these people were used to the Egyptian worship of cows. Kind of like in India today, they have the holy cows, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, holy cow. I think one of them is named Apis. I'm not sure which one that is, but, and it says, these be gods, this is thy God, is what it really says. And so Aaron is compliant. He bows to the pressure. And when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made a proclamation, said, tomorrow is a feast to the Lord, to Jehovah. Well, you know, it's kind of like a religious thing. He's trying to hedge his bet. And they rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and to drink and to rose up and to play. eat and drink. Bullinger says that this is the figure of ellipsis. It means to eat the sacrifices and to drink libations. Libations would be drinks that get you drunk, intoxicating, and to play means to make sport or to dance lasciviously. And then he goes on to say, this is the art of idol worship. In 1 Corinthians 10, you don't have to go there, I'll just read it to you. You can if you want, but you don't have to. 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 7. It says, neither be idolaters as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. So it mentions that in chapter 10 of 1 Corinthians. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, or verse 1, chapter 10, it says, brethren, I would not have you ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea and all were baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and so on and so forth. But then they forgot about God and they rose up and worshiped idols. So back to Exodus. Now, the one thing I thought here about this is, you know, Moses left when he was 40 years old. He was raised up by the Egyptians, right? But he left. And he went and he was in the land of Midian. As far as we know, Jethro was a godly man of sorts. He gave good counsel to Moses. He liked Moses. He took care of him. But Moses was up there and he was taking care of the sheep. And then he went on the mount and he saw the burning bush. God trained Moses and took care of him and worked in his life. Where was Aaron? He was in Egypt. He was in Egypt and he had to deal with all that idolatry for all those years. And he was living with all those Jews and they had idols even then because they had carried them way back from the time that Israel came out with his two wives, right? One of the wives brought her father's idol. So he fell right back into his old ways. You know, he was used to it, you know, to worship that cow. He had seen the Egyptians doing it. He had seen their worship. The Jews had seen their worship, and maybe they participated sometimes. So anyway, it's food for thought, right? So then the Lord says, verse 7, so this is all going on down in the camp. Moses is up on top of the mountain getting the stone tablets, which God wrote with his figure of speech, right? You know, giving God a human attribute. And the Lord said unto Moses, get thee down, for thy people, which thou broughtest out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them. They have made them a molten calf, and have worshipped it, and have sacrificed thereunto, and said, these be thy gods, O Israel, which have brought thee up out of the land of Egypt. God knew exactly what they were doing and what they said. Can't fool God. And how that must have hurt God's heart. Because who brought him up out of Egypt? Who showed him all the great miracles? How, you know, you know, the lice came and they went everywhere but to the Israelites. There was darkness all over Israel, Egypt, but not in the land of Goshen where the Israelites were. And then the angel of death or the destroyer came through and killed the firstborn of every family and of every animal, you know, flock or family or whatever, except for the Israelites. And then they go across the Red Sea and he delivers them and destroys the Egyptian army. And then they say, this calf delivered them and brought them out of Egypt. And they make the calf to do what? To go back to Egypt, to go back to slavery, to bondage. So what does God say in verse 9? The Lord said unto Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, it is a stiff-necked people. Stiff-necked, meaning, you know, they don't want to change. They're just, They see one thing and they don't want to change and they don't want to get blessed. Now, therefore, let me alone that my wrath may wax hot against them and that I may consume them, and I will make thee a great nation. Wow. God says to Moses, okay, this is it. I'm done. I'm done with these guys. You know, basically God's disowning Israel. You know, he's saying, you know, Moses, I have seen this people. They have turned aside. He goes, which these be gods that brought them out of Egypt. The Lord said unto Moses, I have seen this people, and behold, they are stiff-necked. Now, therefore, let me alone that my wrath may wax hot against them, and I may consume them, and I will make thee a great nation. He's done with them. So, and then he says to Moses, I'll make you a great nation. Now, that still will keep the promise that he made to Abraham, because Moses is a descendant of Abraham. So it doesn't change that at all. Verse 11, and Moses besought the Lord his God and said, Lord, why doth thy wrath wax hot against thy people, which thou hast brought forth out of the land of Egypt with a great power and with a mighty hand? So God says, you know, hold on, God, you're the one that brought them out. And here's another great quality of God. He makes intercession for the people. He stands before God and he's shielding the people, is what he's doing. He said, you brought him out with a mighty hand. Nobody else. Wherefore should the Egyptians speak and say, for mischief did he bring them out, to slay them in the mountains and to consume them in the face of the earth? Turn from thy fierce wrath and repent of this evil against thy people. So Moses is pretty bold here. And he says, you know, God, you know, it's going to make you look bad if you do this. And then he goes on, he says, remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, thy servants, to whom thou swearest by thine own self and saidest unto them, I will multiply your seed as the stars of heaven. And all this land that I have spoken of will I give unto your seed, and they shall inherit it forever. God, don't you remember all that? Remember? Verse 14, the Lord repented of the evil which he thought to do unto his people. Wow, what a great thing. What a great stand Moses took for God's people. I don't think he wanted to start over either. You know, but he stood there and he stood up to God and he said, you know, God, whatever. And Moses turned and went down from the mount, and the two tables of the testimony were in his hand. The tables were written on both their sides, on the one side and on the other were they written. And the tables were the work of God, and the writing was the writing of God, graven upon the tables. Now, you know, later on, there's more tables made because Moses is going to smash them. But at that time, God tells Moses to to chisel them out of the rocks. But here, God's already had them. He made them, and he wrote on both sides. You know, when we see, like in the Ten Commandments, he just has the Ten Commandments on the tablets. But that's not what was on there. The whole law that God had given them so far was on those tablets. They were written on, there was two of them, and they were written on both sides. Imagine if they had survived, how cool they must have looked and how beautiful they probably were. Anyway, and when Joshua heard the noise of the people as they shouted, he said unto Moses, there is a noise of war in the camp. And he said, it is not the voice of them that shout for mastery, neither the voice of them that cry for being overcome, but the noise of them that sing, do I hear. it's kind of interesting. The word shout for mastery, the word shout, and the word cry, and the word sing are all the same word in Hebrew. I guess you have to understand Hebrew and the nuances and the way they're placed in the, you know, how they're written in the context. But anyway, so Moses says, you know, that there's not a war going on there. They're singing and playing and having fun. Verse 19, and it came to pass as soon as he came nigh unto the camp, he saw the calf and the dancing, and Moses's anger waxed hot, and he cast the tables out of his hand and brake them beneath the mount. Wow, what a moment in time. Could have been catastrophic. And he took the calf which they had made and burnt it in the fire and ground it to powder and strawed it upon the water and made the children of Israel drink of it. Now, I don't know all the significance of this, but to take the calf and throw it in the fire, which would have melted it, right? And then he took that melted gold and he ground it into a dust and he put it in the water and he made the people drink. That had to take a while, right? That just didn't happen in 5 minutes. And a lot of people there. And there has to be some significance of why he made them drink of it. I'm not sure why. But I guess to humble them. And Moses said unto Aaron, what did this people unto thee that thou brought so great a sin upon them? So Moses, you know, confronts Aaron because Aaron was in charge while he was up on the mountain, right? He was the guy that they were supposed to go to if they had a problem. Well, they had a problem. They got anxious and nervous. And what did Aaron do? He folded. He gave right in. And Aaron said, let not the anger of my Lord wax hot. Thou knowest the people, for they are set on mischief. The NIV says they are prone to evil. You know, I talked about how Aaron was in Egypt for all those years when Moses wasn't. But apparently, Moses was prone to evil too. See you guys. Have a good night. My workers are leaving. Anyway, you don't get rid of idolatrous influence and habits very easily, right? You have to work at it. You have to desire to get rid of those habits. So the people didn't, and apparently Aaron didn't to the extent that he needed to. And so what does he do? For they said unto me, make us gods which shall go up for us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we know not what has become of him. And I said unto them, whosoever hath any gold, let him break it off. So they gave it to me, and I cast it in the fire, and there came out this calf. It just magically appeared out of the fire. So what's Aaron doing?
He's lying
to his brother, and he's you know, he caved really quick. So verse 25, and when Moses saw the people were naked, for Aaron had made them naked unto their shame among their enemies. Then Moses stood in the gate of the camp and said, who is on the Lord's side? Let him come unto me. And all the sons of Levi gathered themselves together unto him. And this seems to be where the Levites become that special tribe. If you hold your place here and go to Deuteronomy 33, next to the last chapter of Deuteronomy, in verse 8 it says, in the beginning here, the previous writing, he's talking about each tribe. He's giving a prophecy concerning each tribe. And he says, of Levi, he said, let thy Thummim and Urim be with the Holy One, whom thou didst prove at Massa, and with whom thou didst strive at the waters of Meribah, who said unto his father and to his mother, I have not seen him. Neither did he acknowledge his brethren, nor knew his own children, for they have observed the word and kept thy covenant. In other words, they didn't get dragged into the idolatry the way the other people did. And when Moses said, who's going to stand for God? The Levites went to him. They shall teach Jacob thy judgments and Israel thy law. They shall put incense before thee and whole burnt sacrifices upon thy altar. Bless the Lord his substance and accept the work of his hands. Smite through the loins of them that rise against him and of them that hate him that rise not again. So back to Exodus. So this is where the Levites step forth, and because of it, they get blessed. And then we go to verse 27, and it says, and he said unto them, thus saith the Lord God of Israel. So here Moses is pronouncing God's judgment. Put every man his sword by his side. He's speaking to the Levites, because he said, anybody who's going to stand by me, stand on the Lord's side, let them come to me. And the sons of Levi gather, and he said unto them, the sons of Levi, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, put every man his sword by his side and go in and out from the gate to gate throughout the camp and slay every man his brother and every man his companion and every man his neighbor. And the children of Levi did according to the word of Moses, and there fell of the people that day 3,000 men. Wow. So this is a judgment. You know, God made a judgment. God causes people to die because they disobeyed, and it's by agent he has them killed. The Levites go and they kill these 3,000 people. The man of God proclaims the judgment, and then the people that he tells to, they execute that judgment. And that's what happened. So again, you know, many times the man of God executes or proclaims the judgment of God. Verse 29. For Moses had said, consecrate yourselves today to the Lord, even every man upon his son and upon his brother, that he may bestow upon you a blessing this day. So, you know, and God did bless the Levites. And it came to pass on the morrow that Moses said unto the people, ye have sinned a great sin, and now I will go up unto the Lord. Peradventure, I shall make an atonement for your sin. And here's another great thing. Moses is putting himself out there to atone or to cover for Israel's sin. Again, that's another great trait of a man of God. He will try to cover for God's people when they sin. He'll go before God to ask forgiveness. Jesus Christ is always at the right hand of God making intercession for us, and he made atonement for our sin. Well, he did more than make atonement. He cleaned them up totally and completely. And Moses returned unto the Lord and said, oh, this people have sinned a great sin and have made them gods of gold. Yet now, if thou wilt forgive their sin, and if not, blot me, I pray thee, out of thy book which thou hast written. And Moses is willing to give his life in payment for the people. You know, so again, it's kind of like Jesus Christ is a parallel there. The innocent giving his life for the guilty. Therefore now go, lead the people unto the place of which I have spoken unto thee. Behold, mine angel shall go before thee. Nevertheless, in the day when I visit, I will visit their sin upon them. And this is another interesting thing. this is the sixth time Moses goes up on the mountain. And he goes this time to make intercession for God. You know, we had seen previously how God had made such an emphasis about not worshiping or making idols. So Moses is willing to take the punishment for the people. And then in verse 34, God reassures him. He says, now therefore go, lead the people unto the place of which I have spoken unto thee. Behold, mine angel shall go before thee. Nevertheless, in the day when I visit, I will visit their sin upon him. And I will visit is in the future. It indicates a postponed judgment, which is kind of interesting. Let's go to Numbers 14. Numbers 14, and I'll get there in a second. 14, verse 33. And your children shall wander in the wilderness 40 years and bear your whoredoms until your carcasses be wasted in the wilderness. This is after the time where he sent the spies in. And because they disobeyed God, he said, well, now you're going to wander for 40 years until all the unbelievers die off. So that was a postponed judgment. It's proclaimed at that moment, but it comes to pass over a period of time. And then in Matthew 23, it says in verse 32, fill ye up then the measure of your fathers, ye serpents, ye generation of vipers. How can ye escape the damnation of hell? As Jesus Christ speaking to the religious leaders. Wherefore, behold, I send unto you, this is, you know, speaking for God. He says, wherefore, behold, I send unto you prophets and wise men and scribes, and some of them ye shall kill and crucify, and some of them shall ye scourge in your synagogues, meaning you beat them, and persecute them from city to city, that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of the righteous Abel and unto the blood of Zacharias, son of Bacharias, or Barachias, whom ye slew between the temple and the altar. Verily I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. So all those things he's talking about happened in the past, but the payment for it is going to happen to this generation, the generation of Jesus Christ. And then back in Exodus 32, we'll finish up the last verse of this chapter. And it says, and the Lord plagued the people because they made the calf which Aaron made. And of course, he plagued them in the future. So that's where we're going to stop tonight. That's a pretty good bit. Yeah. Moses, what a great man. He did so much, and he had that patience to wait for God to receive all that God had to tell him. He loved those people, and he wanted to help them, as screwed up and as wacky as they were, and he was willing to even die to pay for their sin. And God just said, no, we'll keep moving, and you'll lead these people to the land that I promised. So, Father God, we thank you for this night. We thank you for loving us, for keeping us safe and healthy. We thank you for what a great God you are, and what a great record of a great man who just loved you, who was meek and humble and patient to do your will, and how he just was so ready to do whatever you asked him. And we thank you for learning about him and giving us this great record to learn and to learn by, so that we can be better for you. And we thank you in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.